chapter 16, Arakano Problems, Christian Death. And matter and other conditions of the flesh, sins which have taken deep root in the very nature of man, perhaps the most dangerous is drunkenness and drug addiction. This is sin very widespread now. Let everyone remember that one must not wait until this ruinous passion has already developed, but one must guard oneself against it before it develops, when it is significantly easier. For no one was born into God's world already addicted to alcohol or other drugs. We already know how much easier it is for a person to struggle with the temptation of sin when it has not yet become, through repetition, a lasting habit. It is better not to drink at all from youth on. Youth has much vivacity and sufficient energy without it, and to warm oneself with vodka is so unnecessary. A proverb says, give the demon a finger and it will take the whole hand. Young woe is not yet strong, but the temptations of drink or drugs are numerous. Many are ruined in the early years by a special type of courage, a type of sportive passion, wherein a person wants to prove his strength and steadiness in the use of alcohol drinks. Of course, one would show far greater steadiness and strength, real moral strength, if he could really control himself and not yield to the evil temptation. An orthodox person must, by all measures, draw away from sinful seductions and remove them from himself, remembering how the apostle warns that bad associations deprave good morals. There is another carnal sin which, at first glance, does not seem as ruinous as drunkenness and depravity, but which is, nevertheless, extremely dangerous. This is the sin of love of money. The apostle says literally that the root of evils is the love of money. The first danger for a person who has egoistically acquired wealth is that this very wealth opens the access to all other seductions of the world. Moreover, the wealth itself becomes that idol, exactly as the golden idol to which man adheres with all his soul and heart, becoming unable to tear himself away from the service to it. We see an example of this in the gospel story about the rich young man who could not follow the Savior because his life was bound to his wealth. In this regard, Christ said, it is difficult for a rich man to enter God's kingdom. Thus does wealth blind a man and make him a slave. This danger threatens everyone who becomes addicted to acquiring, to seeking gain and aiming for it. In order to prevent this vice of loving money from developing in a person, it is necessary to teach him orthodox disinterestedness in his early years. All the works of the orthodox Christians must be done disinterestedly, or, as the gospel says it, for Christ's sake. As we mentioned earlier, according to divine truth, the gospel truth, it is not a person that saves possessions for himself who acquires, but rather it is the one who gives to others in the struggle of mercy and concern for neighbors who make gains. The one who serves others is in the struggle of good not only shows them orthodox Christian help, but also benefits his own soul, according to himself, a true treasure, acquiring for himself a true treasure in heaven. A person who is seeking to lead an orthodox life should not be negligent about his health. Health is a valuable gift from God and should be guarded. It is foolish to assume that a Christian should not seek to be cured by doctors. Doctors and medicines exist by God's will. We read in the scriptures that the Lord created certain things for curative use. Orthodoxy, however, sees in illness the direct consequences of our sinfulness. For this reason, a believing person begins his treatment first of all with prayer, with the purification and strengthening of the soul with the holy mysteries. Then he follows the treatment of the body prescribed by a doctor. We can see this pattern in the gospel, where before healing a person from his physical ills, Christ healed his soul with the forgiveness of sins. To one the Savior said, "You have been made well. See that you sin no more, so that nothing worse will happen to you." While giving attention to his health, an orthodox person must not fear death. We are not speaking of the martyr's death for Christ's sake, which every believer desires with joy, but simply of the end of our earthly life. True orthodox Christians, in general, do not fear death, but even await it hopefully. Apostle Paul, for instance, says directly, "I desire to die and be with Christ, because it is incomparably better than remaining on earth." In other places, he says, "Our home is in heaven," teaching us that our true native land is there, while on earth we are only temporary exiles. That longed for Christian end of our life is not always without illness, but in any case is blameless and peaceful. One prepares for such an end by prayer, contemplation, and partaking of the holy mysteries. A shameful non-Christian death, on the other hand, is a terrible thing. A criminal dying in the middle of the crime, etc. At this point, we must mention suicide. It is well known that the Holy Church, by its canons, withholds a Christian burial to those who consciously, without mental impairment, take their own lives. Suicide is a complete betrayal of the very spirit of Christianity, a refusal to bear one's cross, a rejection of God and hope on Him. Suicide is a sordid death of the complete egoist. One who commits suicide ceases to be a faithful son of the Holy Church and thus deprives himself of his burial. And how could the Church bury a suicide according to her service? The main thought of this burial service is, "Give rest, O Lord, to the soul of your servant, for he placed his hope on you." But these words will ring with untruth in the case of suicide. How could the Holy Church affirm untruth